I brought two possibilities with me. I've just selected the second. I'm not going to tell you my story. For a lot of reasons that that are good and maybe not so good, but I am consoling myself with the understanding, after all, what is heaven for but time to hear what we don't have time for now. So I am going to share a bit of where my work and your story intersects, because I think that might be what would be helpful. Some of you read last night an excerpt from a paper that I have not published and probably will not publish, but I want to share it publicly this way because it has to do with a cup. Oh, it's dangerous to dream of cups. And I wanted to just give you some background out of my discipline of study about a cup that now belongs to this gathering and will, as long as anyone remembers, reimagining. The text that is linked with that cup of milk and honey belongs to the earliest copy text of a communion service that we now know of. There may be some that are earlier we will find, but it dates, they believe, between the years 215 and maybe 220. And it is called, it's a work that's attributed to a church father, Hippolytus, and it is most often referred to as the apostolic tradition. Now, Hippolytus is a very curious author to have attributed this text to, that is now considered apostolic, because he was a very crusty would be a kind word. He was obnoxious. Well, at least Rome didn't like him very much. Let me put it that way. He was a challenger for the bishop's chair in Rome, and some interpreters will basically state outright that he was a schismatic. Not quite heretical, but close enough. And it's fascinating to me, one of the proofs that the Holy One has a very odd sense of humor, that it is this Eucharistic text by a near heretic that has survived the terrors of history. Because those of you who have been involved in your denominational reformation of liturgies dealing with communion over the last 25 years may know that it is this apostolic tradition that was the impulse for many of the reformations of our communion liturgies that we now have. Now, the aftermath of the Sophia controversy and the accusation that was made to this gathering and the sisters of this gathering of illegitimate communions have in a very interesting way returned apostolic tradition into a suspect, schismatic, and possibly heretical condition again. Because though the cup of milk and honey has impeccable liturgical credentials, thanks to Hippolytus, it now appears very unapostolic. And those of you who choose to defend this cup risk that charge as well. Now, the thing that might help you to know is there's an outstanding liturgical scholar who took the trouble to do deep scholarship in Jewish tradition. His name is Paul Bradshaw. And I want to read you a caution that he writes about this sort of unchallenged assumption that when you're dealing with the, quote, apostolic tradition, particularly this service where there were three cups, not one, and the one in the middle was the one of milk and honey, that that might not have been so traditional. This is what he says. At least to some extent, they, whoever they were, in addition to Hippolytus, may have been indulging in an idealizing dream. They might have been prescribing rather than describing. Now, if you get that point here, it's a lot of scholarship will go down the tubes on the difference here. What if this was not the practice of Rome, but what should have been, at least according to a group of people under the name of Hippolytus? What if this was imagining what the organization and liturgy of their community would be like if they were allowed to have their own way and to impose their idiosyncratic ideas on the rest of the congregation? Unquote. And I didn't make up that word, imagining. It's right there in the text. So if the apostolic tradition does not document actual historical practice, but the imagining of what a liturgy would be like if, then the first communion of those new Christians in ancient Rome may have more in common with the gathering in Minneapolis than we might want to admit. How is it possible that a single author could craft a prayer for an entire community that had never been prayed before and have the audacity to call it tradition or apostolic either? And it is really ironic that perhaps this critical piece of apostolic history might in fact be nothing but an act of imagining. It might also interest you to know that one of the strongest arguments for ascribing this text that does contain the line that you read in your book, this cup, milk and honey, given for the healing of the bitterness of the human heart by the sweetness of Christ's word, that line that survived since the year 215, give or take a few years, that the strongest argument for giving this text to Rome and dating it there, and to say that someone who was a near heretic called Hippolytus, that argument rests on a list of writings, texts that are inscribed into a base of a statue that was found in Rome in 1551. And it says on this, of Carums / apostolic tradition. Now, on the basis of this, and you can look in the books, and there's a picture of the august near heretic sitting there with these writings attributed to him underneath this seat. But recent research, which involved taking rather detailed photographs of this statue, has revealed, I hope you're ready, I want you to look around the room first. Just look around the room for a moment, all right? Recent research has revealed that this statue was originally a female figure composed of parts taken from other statues, but restored in the 16th century as a male bishop because of the inscriptions on the base. Now, I'm going to pass on the temptation about thinking about women's religious images being composed of body parts. But I do want to venture one really personal word. It's dangerous, you know, if you read too many heretics of whatever century you're in. And I come from a place, well, you know, people that are born there, we talk about it as being West by God, Virginia. And now, subversion. We haven't paid, I mean, we being real West Virginians, haven't paid whiskey tax since 1792. Because we engage in this very subversive act called moonshine, making moonshine. So that accounts for what I'm going to say next. The body parts business and having read this and, you know, coming out of the past that I come out of and knowing that there aren't many ways that you can subvert public structures of injustice, but you can make fun of them a little bit in a really interesting way. Well, anyway, all those pieces just collided together in my head when I got this book with this picture. And I started laughing hysterically at the breakfast table, and my husband said, "What is it?" And I said, "Take a look at this." He said, "Oh, no." He said, "Those people are into making moonshine." Well, so much for shining and moons and all that. Body parts, where were we? Yeah. Okay. I can remember the first time I read this text. I was in my first class of seminary, 1972. I opened to the very first page of a book called Liturgies of the Western Church, and there it is, Hippolytus, and I read about three cups, and I say to myself, what happened? Where did they go? It undid everything I'd been taught. It took me a long time to get over it. I haven't yet. Why did we leave the cup off the table? Not just the milk and honey, but the one for the washing of the inner body. What would be permitted if this very female cup of milk and honey came back? What would be altered? You know, we've got all the paperwork signed. We're, at least on textual grounds, more ecumenical than we've ever been. And the distance between our tables has never been greater. I keep wondering what would happen if this cup became the one cup we would be willing to drink from and pass to any sister or brother in Christ, a cup of milk and honey given for the healing of the bitterness of the human heart with the sweetness of the word. Now, I didn't get here the first time everybody got together because I was sitting at home trying to write a chapter for my own defense and my institution's defense, and interestingly enough, I was in the middle of this cup of milk and honey. And I had no idea what you were doing, and I grieved about having to give my tickets away. And I'm told the woman who got my tickets is here. Is she here? I'm glad you were here. I'm sorry I wasn't, but I'm glad you were. Well, at any rate, I'll cut the rest of this. So what's so toxic about a cup of milk and honey? Was it because women offered it? Did it infringe on the sacramental authority of clergy? Was it because laity dared to lay hands on its meaning and shape? Now, United Methodists should not have been offended. Our tradition is love feasts, and that's lay participation, and the only guideline is that you don't put anything in the cup that can be mistaken for the fruit of the vine. You know, there is even, if you want to be real historical, there's a three-handed tradition, three-handled cup used by Methodists in love feasts, designed for anyone who belongs to the covenant of Christ. Perhaps it is in fact the inclusivity of the cup that offended. It is the only vessel that might conceivably go hand to hand across our separated tables. So, who polluted the cup? Was it the way that the Holy One was named? Well, I don't know whether the liturgist who decided to call what they called God that day was aware they had a safer Hebrew word, El Shaddai. They should have used that, because, of course, that means God of the high places. Of course, it also means God who has breasts, but, you know. And this may be the connection that is the key to the mystery of this cup's absence from the table. Perhaps the curve of the chalice and the taste of sweetened milk is far too female for the early church. Perhaps even the mountain pastor who tracked me down at my family's farm about 4 months after you all stirred it all up was only echoing an early church father. I had somebody come for my soul's salvation. Heard I was in town and thought he'd better come and get me back into the body of Christ. Because the toxic poison had spread even into this tiny little place where I'm born. It's called Palestine, West Virginia. Now, so he's sitting with me and he's in struggle with my soul, and I don't want to make fun of him, and I don't want to make fun of the fact we're Appalachian, but I'm going to tell you what we talked about. I said to him, I said, what do you know about this cup? You know anything about the history of communion? Now, he's a lay pastor. He doesn't get to go to seminary. So he doesn't have the privilege of knowing some of what I know. So I had to lean a little light on that one. But I said, do you know we have the oldest words of communion service that has this in it? The oldest copy we've got. He didn't care. He didn't know. It didn't make any difference. It was blasphemous. It was blasphemous. And I said, why? He said, because what was in that cup? Well, I said, milk and honey is biblical, not blasphemous. And then he just went bright red. I said, what is it? He said, you know, don't make me say this. I said, I don't know. I wasn't there. He said, it was breast milk. It gets better or worse, depending. Breast milk, he said, and woman fluid. Now, I must admit, I lost a little bit of concentration here. As someone who is frequently in charge of getting the elements together for conference communion, I was agog at the challenges that that particular... thought was true, that he had been told, that was some act of imagination. Is that why, as a matter of fact? Is it because of the pervasive link of birth and sex and female body fluids that chalice represents such a challenge to antimatter critics? Because body fluids mean bodies out of control. And stain is the ancient symbol and physicality of sin in a Christian tradition. Now, If you want a little philosophy thrown in here, Paul Ricoeur argues that we can no longer coordinate a ritual action for purification because the dread of the impure can no longer be reenacted, even, and that's his words, in sympathetic imagination. But what Paul Ricoeur didn't know, you do. Eucharistic language, this is my body, has been so distanced from the pre-symbolic that it does not trigger either mystery or fear. But a cup of milk and honey crosses over. Crosses over. Will new birth, bread, water, milk, honey, wine, you will be, unless you surrender that cup, subversive for a long time.